You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey, please drink responsibly.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Well, this is weird, Chris Whittingham. This is weird. An emergency Chelsea pod on the main feed.
Yes.
We just so happen to be at the studio well after the show posted. And if we thought world football was upside down beginning the day, the scenes outside of Stamford Bridge are surreal. And we'll get into that momentarily. But just to drop bonafides, if you're listening to this show, you probably know. We co-host an official Chelsea Club podcast, which at times can be an awkward position when you're essentially a marketing arm of the club. And I have to wear that sort of bias and conflict of interest because I work in partnership with the club to deliver Chelsea Mic'd Up subscribe rate review to you, the audience. And so we know every in and out of this club outside of Roman Abramovich. We've met basically every decision maker or interviewed every decision maker that's in this. Let's start at the beginning, which is, if you're just catching up, if you're just going by show titles, the formation of the Super League. It's about a dozen of Europe's most well-known clubs, not necessarily most successful based on current form, but the major clubs in England: Tottenham Hotspur, Arsenal, Manchester United, Manchester City, Chelsea. Am I forgetting one? Liverpool. Yep. That's right, Liverpool. Banded with AC Milan, Inter Milan, and Juventus of Italy. Banded with Atletico Madrid, Real Madrid, and Barcelona of Spain, formed this own breakaway league that sought to replace the UEFA Champions League as a midweek competition and get rid of the notion of a meritocracy, really. Have the founders be birthrighted in every year. And founders, and Chelsea was among that list of founders, would get $3.2 billion and their place would never be lost. It was an American sports concept because there was really no punitive measure for not being good. According to these rules, Arsenal could find themselves relegated from the Premier League and still in this elite Super League. Cut to a very poisonous reaction from fan bases all across the world, especially where these domestic leagues are located, more so in England than anywhere else. This seemed to be a non-starter. Credit to the Germans. No go. Dortmund and Bayern Munich announced that they weren't in. If there were a silent couple of teams in all of this, in terms of that group of 12 or so clubs, it was Manchester City and Chelsea, two of the four clubs in the present Champions League semifinals, which is another interesting component to all of this. Now, I've probably bored you because you know this. Let's cut to what happened today outside of Stamford Bridge, where Chelsea play. Chelsea have a game today that's set to kick off here momentarily. Supporters of Chelsea Football Club went outside of Stamford Bridge in mass. Mm-hmm. Now, we have seen very disorganized displays from other fan bases. I think one of our friends mentioned Arsenal had three guys in a cardboard cutout. But there were hundreds and hundreds of Chelsea supporters out there, and these were very dramatic images. Petrček, a club legend. He was a Champions League winning goalkeeper, made a brilliant penalty save. We interviewed him on Chelsea Mic'd Up. Check out the archive. Man, I really love
getting the plugs in.
For once, not a separation of church and state. Pleading with supporters to make way for a team bus, saying, "We'll get it sorted. Just let us play." This was always the interesting part of all of this, because it happened under the cover of a pandemic. Clubs saying the pandemic forced their hands on this, even though it was rumored long before that. And the pandemic also provided something that was a bit convenient for these clubs, Chris. And I'll cede the floor. I've been talking way too much, but I'm giving background. There were no fans in the stands to voice their displeasure.
Yes.
So how would the supporters voice their displeasure? They took it to the streets, and they went outside of Stamford Bridge on a match day. And those supporters that have caught a lot of shit internationally for being a team that doesn't have any history, which is another aspect of all of this, Chris, mm-hmm. because Chelsea is kind of new money in all of this, which might explain why they're reportedly pulling out. I don't think we expected this kind of display from Chelsea.
I don't think we expected this kind of display because of COVID, right? Like, we have not seen displays like this in most European countries because there are strict lockdown restrictions. And so the fact that they did this is the display that, you know, since we're, you know, posting this on the show feed, I mentioned this earlier on in today's show, which was they don't just take it on the chin. They're not naive. They're aggressive, right? They will aggressively fight this until the last breath that they can, and keeping their domestic leagues and the European competitions as they are alive. And as you said, Mike, the whole point of protests like these are to create powerful images. And it has been reported that Chelsea's team bus was not allowed to get to the stadium, which is attached to it. Like, there isn't really, they don't have to travel that
far. We've stayed there.
Right. We've stayed
it's
at
a hop away.
Right. Well, it's the hotel is attached to the stadium. And so they couldn't get on the team bus to get to their dressing room. Brighton, their opponent today, couldn't get to the stadium. And as you mentioned, a club legend who is now in the front office is pleading with the supporters for whom he won a European trophy to please let the players in. And so you have those powerful scenes enough. Add on top of it that when the first report comes from Dan Roan of the BBC that they're drafting paperwork to get out of the Super League, a huge explosion of joy emerges from it. And it's just incredible that from Sunday afternoon Eastern time until Tuesday afternoon Eastern time, 48 hours, the amount of developments, the number of things that have happened, and one of the clubs has been so pressured by their own supporters that they're actually pulling out. Because ultimately, what was going to allow this to happen was the strength, the political power, the actual power that these clubs have to withstand unpopularity. And how strong was this display? How unpopular was this that it was toppled at the first hurdle?
I saw Matt Law, who's done a great job reporting around Chelsea, come out with the take that Manchester City and Chelsea were really the most apprehensive of these clubs that were joining this Super League. And he was like, in many respects, I'm most disappointed in these two clubs because compared to all these other legacy clubs here, Chris, they're new money. They recently made the climb. These are clubs that, I guess in the scope of things, were fairly recently in the lower divisions. And with an injection of a lot of money, let's call it what it is, they made that miracle climb up to the top of their leagues, and now they are these establishment clubs. So it makes sense, being that they're newer money, that they'd be the first clubs to withdraw from this. Now, it's very fluid. We have no idea what this means for the future of the Super League. Without Manchester City and Chelsea, it kind of feels like a death blow to all of this, but maybe the point of all of this was to get people's attention and use it purely as a negotiation tactic. At least that's what we saw from Florentino Perez in El Chiringuito.
Which I don't think we had enough fun with the fact that the major news source on this is El Chiringuito, the television show in Spain. But you do kind of wonder what kind of L these clubs just took. Now, I agree with you. I think that some derivative of the Super League is going to get Trojan horsed as a result of this, right? But I think if clubs are indeed pulling out, which we've seen reports of two, again, I like to see formally signed paperwork. We operate in the world of transfers, which you don't say it's done until someone's holding up a jersey.
At time of recording, it seems as though the reports
two clubs are out, and I actually just read that Atletico Madrid might be another one on the way out as well. So momentum is starting to turn in this direction. But I still wonder what happens when these clubs return to the negotiating table with Europe. With, you know, for example, in the Premier League, which is, you know, Chelsea were due to play in the Premier League today against Brighton. Brighton were going to wear the same shirts that Leeds United wore yesterday, which was Champions League earn it or whatever it is.
Yeah, like, which is rich, especially from like Leeds owners doing the grandstanding. There's a fair amount of grandstanding from UEFA, of course, FIFA, and the Premier League.
Self-interest. But those 14 clubs had all banded together to say, anytime we play a Super League team, we're going to wear these shirts, we're going to have these displays. And one of the owners, Steve Parrish of Crystal Palace, came out and said, we're going to have some serious conversations at boardroom level. And you wonder how much earth is scorched here when these teams eventually go back to the negotiating table. But I can't believe that it folded this quickly. I really can't. I know, and I should give you credit because you said all along, this isn't going to happen, but I really thought this time that they would just have all the FU money in the world to just plow through with what they want to do.
Every time, and this is like an annual tradition, the Super League aggregate stories that come out, and I just never really take it all that seriously because I see it as a negotiation tactic. I never really thought that they would go through with it, have the artwork, have the press release like they did. They did the hard part, seemingly, but the hardest part is actually facing the fans here. I wonder what it means for the future of that, what it means for a Champions League semifinal that we think may still go on. At least that's what Florentino was saying. Chelsea play Real Madrid in a semifinal clash that's been decades in the making and people have wanted to see forever, that already had plenty of storylines, from two cousins playing against each other to Eden Hazard making a return to fitness to Thibaut Courtois and the controversial way he left Chelsea, being in net now for Real Madrid, to Kovacic hopefully being healthy for that clash. A lot of storylines going into that, and now you have the first defector against the club that is going to be steadfast. And I do understand where Real Madrid and Barcelona are coming from a little bit, because the dynamics in Spain are a lot different than the dynamics in England. It's a more competitive league. Leicester City recently won one of those. The grassroots culture. Real Madrid and Barcelona have been at the very top of that league for generations. Mm-hmm. And the financial situation is different there. Stars are fleeing from La Liga. They're trying to make sure that they are not left in the dust. I'm not rationalizing the behavior. I'm just trying to explain some of it.
In some ways, they are actually trying to create a competitor and eat the Premier League, because the Premier League is so popular here in the United States, and it is the most popular global league by a sizable amount. I know, you know, when Real and Barca play in Clásicos, those are big occasions, but as you said, there are 36 other fixtures, and most fans don't seem to care as much about them, or at least not yet. So leagues are jealous of the Premier League. They're jealous that they play over Christmas and they, you know, draw the attention in the world. They've tried to play on Christmas. It doesn't work the same for them. They're jealous of the Premier League. And so in some ways, we'll take your biggest clubs, we'll start our own thing, and we've not, you know, kind of killed two birds with one stone. So there are definitely financial interests that made sense here. The question is, would they withstand the public pressure so violently against them? And what happens now that it appears as though, we'll see what happens, but it appears as though they're losing.
I don't know if there is a public relations win to be had by some of these founding clubs. Very self-serving for me to see the silver lining here. It's like, well, Chelsea, I think Chelsea's supporters are the big winners on the day, given how they are sort of laughed at internationally for being new money. We ain't got no history. That whole rallying cry of people that hate this, you know, Russian oligarch came to save you. You were nobody before then. Conveniently enough, the reports are that Roman Abramovich wasn't really in on this. I think that's a positive PR spin. There were a lot of people blaming the American Bruce Buck. I'm not exactly sure that's how things operate over there at Chelsea, but there was a lot of anti-American sentiment.
What have you made of that? Because, like, I am generally on the side of the people here, but there is a little bit of, like, whoa, like, people No one seemed to like us over there.
Yeah, I saw Troops join part in my take, and he was really grasping at straws, I think, to try to find the American ties and say this is just an American fault. And part of it is just their content factory over there, and that gets a lot of engagement.
Yeah.
But it's true. It's the narrative. We've seen how false narratives can become rallying cries for bases in this country to not get political with you.
And let's not pretend that Americans don't have the superior business model, because they do, right?
They do. That's a thing.
Like it is a better business model, but like, for example, we as American soccer fans want MLS to have promotion and relegation. Every fan says that.
It's great.
It's great. It's incredible. It would be amazing. All of a sudden, you know, from New York City to Omaha can have an MLS team if there's promotion relegation, right? Go all the way from USL League One and win your way up to the top division. But MLS clubs are more valuable. MLS owners pay expansion fees. It's so ingrained that why would you change the business model when it will hurt you so significantly?
I don't want to get too in the weeds, but go ahead and Google, if you want to supplement this podcast, Ricardo Silva's proposal, which actually had some supporters within it. But ultimately, they're not going to make these big expansion fee investments in MLS clubs just to be sent down and get a smaller piece of the TV pie.
For a short-term gain, these are generational investments. If you buy into MLS, you're saying that in 2 and 3 generations from now, when soccer has grown to the point where it's $1 billion, every club is worth $1 billion, you've multiplied your investment by 5 and 6, right? Like, you can do that if you invest into MLS, which you just can't when you invest in a European soccer club, because if you have a bad season, you make 20% as much money as you did the year before.
The general view that I got on social media, by just trying to put it out there and poke holes in this romanticism that we have of the Premier League, because that was born out of a very similar move, is that maybe I'm a jaded American, and maybe I'm also wearing my conflicts too with Chelsea, because I can't come out in full, I can't be like, this is a terrible idea, because that would be very stupid for me. I enjoy my podcast. I enjoy the access. I'm not being disingenuous, but if Chelsea kick off at noon on a Tuesday against Barcelona, I'm not going to throw empty threats. I'm going to be watching that game. And I always figured this thing will figure itself out. I've always been that way. Mm-hmm. I've always thought this was a negotiation tactic and didn't think it was real. But the romanticism of holding football up, especially in England, as if something it's not, was just like, what are we doing here? Yes, I understand Leicester can do it, but I don't think Leighton Orient's going to win the league. It can happen in 50 years, but it's just not a realistic thing. But got to eat it if you're coming at it as a jaded American, because the true supporters of Chelsea Football Club won the day. If there's a PR win to be had, it's for Chelsea in all of this because of the public show of the supporters. It's very convenient for, even though Man City, I imagine, had their true reservations to this. The Atletico Madrid is hilarious. That thing, if true, is funny because they watched what just happened. But they're going to remember the first team to drop out of this. I'm already seeing it. I'm seeing Roger Bennett, who unfollowed me, I think in part because he hates Chelsea so much, is saying, thank you, Chelsea. Thank you, Chelsea supporters. People are applauding Roman Abramovich. Now you go from villain, and maybe unwilling villain, but villain nonetheless, to a hero, if there can be one in all of this.
And one of the things that I thought was really interesting when the Super League news was first breaking was people were encouraging Liverpool fans, hey, we don't think this is you. We think this is the owners. Fans are the faces and the people behind the club. It's not the players. They come and go. It's the fans that are the through line through the history. And so for Chelsea fans to represent the club in this way, as you said, is complete PR, and you know Chelsea will get a good run of PR out of this, but it's their fans who should. Chelsea is, and any club is, an embodiment of their fans, and their voices were heard today. They've changed the game. Billions of dollars have turned on the backs of Chelsea fans raising their voices. I think that's really cool. The other aspect of this that, to me, you mentioned kind of how Chelsea, by virtue of the fact that they are new money, can kind of most afford to not want to go along with this. It is interesting because I wonder if Chelsea fans, particularly around the world, are cognizant of the fact that they are supporting a club which, if they join the Super League, could not exist now, right? If the Super League comes into place, There can't be a billionaire who takes your club from the championship or the lower levels of the Premier League and lifts them up to winning titles, winning European titles. Like, your journey, the off-ramp for that would be closed off by the Super League. And you do wonder if, like, you do want to leave the door open for some other club, because English football has changed over time. If you go back into the 70s, like, Nottingham Forest was the biggest club in England, and now they're struggling to get out of the championship. Like, your fortunes go up and down, and it's based off sporting merit. And in some cases, financial merit, right?
At least, like, the idea of
sporting
merit.
Right, the idea of it.
The fact that it's possible.
Yes.
The grassroots, mm-hmm. honest to goodness Cinderella story can happen in across multiple competitions in that country.
Yeah, well, we've seen it in Europe as well, when Ajax gets to a semifinal, and when, you know, Monaco gets to a semifinal, because they're Borussia Dortmund, because they're
Porto won a Champions League.
Their club is so incredibly well run that they could make those steps. So the journey is possible, and that is the hope of every football fan. And I am jealous of it as an American, because I would really think it to be cool if all of a sudden Union Omaha rose from USL League One to win MLS. I think it'd be really cool if the Jupiter Hammerheads broke free from the Marlins and went from single A, played in Major League Baseball, and won a World Series. Yeah. Like, those dreams are such a cool thing to experience.
I'm drawn to it. Look, initially, am I a glory hunter? Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought the Samsung kits were cool, and I like DDA Drogba, so I can't even imagine the emotion attached to this. Although my story is uniquely American, I've also been blessed to be handpicked by the club to be like, we believe in you. So I have real legitimate relationships over there. I love this club.
And you become a fan, not just because they're the best team or they have the best, but eventually, over the course of the 15 plus years you've been a fan, you've learned the story of the club. You've taken on the history. You enjoy a cold Tuesday night in Stoke.
I do.
You enjoy all the aspects. Like, it is a cultural exchange. It's not just, this is my favorite soccer team, these are my favorite group of 11 guys running around kicking a ball, right? You develop a legitimate attachment to all the other parts of being a fan.
I know it feels pretty good for traditionalism right now. I don't want to rain on the parade, but this won't be the first time something like this pops up. Hell, it may still be going forward. For those that aren't familiar with Florentino Perez, he's pretty stubborn.
And he's pretty powerful.
He's very powerful. There's a reason why they put him in charge of this. And he was doing all the heel promo things that you would want in the president, so you wouldn't have to take the backlash. I kind of still feel like something like this is inevitable. Maybe it's some sort of compromise, Chris, but this isn't the last that we've seen of something like this. You and I were joking yesterday that, well, Stephen Ross is going to start buying an expansion team, because wait till these founding clubs get a load of expansion fees. There's way too much money on the table.
Yeah, you wouldn't have, if you created a Super League out of nothing, you wouldn't have three teams in the northwest of England. Mm-hmm. These are just the biggest brands for now. But, like, Manchester City relocating to New York was not out of the realm of possibilities for the Super League. Like, expansion teams formed in America, and an expansion team formed in China, an expansion team formed in India.
They were introducing salary caps.
Yeah.
Once you start going down that road, you make an American. I think I speak for all Americans that support this sport, that have supported it over the course of years, not just because they're picking PSG versus Barca on FIFA. We're drawn to what it is because it's different. I'm a Cleveland Browns fan. My team was ripped away from me. Mm-hmm. And for an expansion fee, I was able to buy that history back somehow, even though the franchise, Arm Odell took it because he didn't get a publicly funded stadium. I hate that that stuff can happen in America. I like that it's a lot harder to do over there.
And by the way, I just hope, and look, you know, in this country, we've managed to succeed with a movement like this. Columbus Crew was nearly relocated from Columbus to Austin, Texas, and the Columbus fans stood up and did just about enough. Got a rich person involved in the Haslam family, benevolent Cleveland Browns owners, to buy them a new stadium and keep the team in Columbus. They only went in one MLS Cup last year. So there are success stories in America. However, I just hope, like, for example, the San Diego Chargers moved, the Oakland Raiders moved, the, you know, Golden State Warriors kind of moved from one area of the Bay to another. Relocation happens all the time in this country.
We actually may see a team move to
and
London.
And my only hope from an outcome standpoint that comes out of this is that Americans realize, because this story has gotten a ton of play here, that Americans realize you can do that too. You can do what the Chelsea fans did today too.
No, you can't.
Oh, come on.
No, you can't.
Come on. Let me dream.
No, we're just built different.
We did. Columbus did. But I mean, but I see what
soccer
you're
is different.
Yeah.
Because they tap into more of a tribalism. We've seen some college football towns like get their way. Greg Schiano doesn't get hired because a fan base doesn't want him. Boosters wield an unruly amount of power in that sport. But when it comes to the NFL, we're just sort of beaten, I think, into submission because it's just a way of the world for us here. And in the old world, it is certainly not the way.
But I think and I hope that maybe you can draw yourselves out of submission, right? Like, what if there was a protest because beers are $14 now?
You're such a romantic, Chris.
Why not?
Yeah, I still think something, even if it's a compromise, is going to happen in the immediate future. In the immediate future. I don't think you can just kick Chelsea out of the Champions League if these clubs get their way. Really, I think Real Madrid and Arsenal and Tottenham, they want to be secure because they own prime real estate. Legitimately. We're talking about real estate within city lines.
Yeah.
Because you couldn't help but see that these were all just major cities in Europe that banded together here. I think that ultimately what the super club teams, what the super league clubs were saying is, we have a value, we bring brands, and no one's tuning in to see Real Sociedad in the group stage take on, you know, Red Bull Salzburg.
Yeah.
They're not going to do that. They're coming to watch the glamour clubs, and they're coming to watch the glamour knockout phases. They are tuning in possibly record numbers over streaming audiences for Chelsea, Real Madrid. So I think they have a point, certainly from a financial aspect. JP Morgan is a credible financial institution that's an investment bank that makes sound investments.
Yeah.
Okay. This is a part of it is inevitable.
I agree. There's too much money to be made here, right? And as you said, it is the big clubs that draw. I guess the thing is there room for both people in Austria to have the dream that Red Bull Salzburg, although, I mean, let's not pretend that they're worthy of dreaming about, that. Right? Let me choose a different example.
Let's just put pause on this as we talk about traditionalism and romanticize. We can climb from the bottom where we take corporate-branded Red Bull Salzburg and we make them the darling.
Can I make Rapid Vienna the hero then?
I swear to God, I saw someone tweet, I am done with the elite in this sport.
So
I'm supporting RB Leipzig, which stands for Red Bull.
Well, no, it actually It's Red Bull. They're Trojan horsing Red Bull.
Yeah.
But yeah, is there room for both, right? Do you make enough money? Like, I think ultimately, like, that's the question that a lot of fans ask today is, like, how much money is enough? Like, how many 60 million pound strikers do you need?
Like, I think the answer is more. And the clubs are going to get more.
I agree.
They actually approved the Swiss model.
Mm-hmm.
Can you explain real quick to our audience what the Swiss model was in Champions League? But it seemed as though it was just a formality because behind the scenes they were planning this whole sabotage the whole time.
Yeah, so they basically added more games to the group stage and another knockout round. So instead, right now it's 32 teams, 8 groups of 4, top 2 teams in each group go through to the round of 16. The Swiss model is 36 teams divided into 2 groups of 18. The top 4 teams in each group automatically go through to the knockout round, and then teams 9 through 24 play a round of 24, I guess you can say, to qualify into the next round. So it's basically adding more inventory, essentially, more games for the streaming partners and all that to pay more money for.
It's a quiet time in the sports landscape. I know the NFL draft is next week, and maybe we don't have this discussion or all that attention here in the United States. If this happens, just next week. But for right now, you look at the sports landscape, it's worth talking about. This is a geopolitical story.
Yeah.
As much as it is a sports story, this is people like money and power grabs. And this is, I hope we did a good job explaining it, which is why we felt the need, we felt compelled, because it's also on brand for us and an opportunity to promote Chelsea Mic'd Up, the only official, at least in America, the only official Chelsea FC podcast with tremendous access and interviews. We felt the need to do this emergency pod because the world was changing out from under us as we were still here in the studio working. Quick note on the show. Obviously, tomorrow's a Wednesday. We are historically off. You usually get a South Beach session on Wednesday, and Supodity is a different case. It just works on its own schedule. But we're going to go inverted here a little bit. We're working in reverse. Mystery Crate will drop tomorrow. It is a special episode trying to capitalize a few days heads up before Mortal Kombat, the reboot, premieres on HBO Max. We have a Cinephobe Mystery Crate collaboration, and that's dropping tomorrow. You're going to have to wait a few days for South Beach Sessions, but that's with good reason, because the reason why we're here in the studio right now is Gilbert Arenas gave us an interview for the ages on South Beach Sessions, and that will drop on Friday. It'll be worth the wait. I promise you that. I almost did the Chelsea mic'd up tagline until we speak again up to Chelsea, but we hope you enjoy this emergency pod of the Dan Le Batard Show with Sue Gatz. I'm Mike Ryan.
I'm Chris Whittingham.
I've always wanted to do that shit. Leave a 5-star review up to Chelsea.
All right, everybody, Mother's Day is officially around the corner. If mom's gift isn't already on the way, you've got hours, maybe even minutes, to get it together. So head over to 1-800-Flowers.com right this second. 1-800-Flowers still has great last-minute deals on handmade bouquets, sweet treats, gourmet food, and one-of-a-kind gifts ordered easily and delivered fresh. You want to get mom something that shows your appreciation for all that she's done? We know you've been a knucklehead. She knows you've been a knucklehead. Please do better. Help your mom feel appreciated this Mother's Day. This is your last chance to lock in these Mother's Day deals. Only good while supplies last. Order today at 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan, D-A-N. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/Dan.